Part 2. The Coral City. Chapter 8. Soldiers from Hell. Butchery. Betrayal.
30 seconds!
Yelled Vipers, his voice barely audible over the screaming jets as the drop pod sliced through Istvan III's atmosphere. The Astartes of Lacasta were bathed in red light, and for a moment Loken imagined what they would look like to the people of the Coral City when the assault began. Warriors from another world. Soldiers from Hell.
"What's our landing point looking like?"
shouted Loken. Vipers glanced at the readout on a picked screen mounted above his head.
"Drifting! We'll hit the target, but off-center. I hate these things. Give me a Stormbird any day."
Loken didn't bother replying, barely able to hear Nero as the atmosphere thickened beneath the drop pod and the jets on its underside kicked in. The drop pod shuddered and began heating up as the enormous forces pushing against it turned to fire and noise. He sat through the last few minutes while everything around him was noise, unable to see the enemy he was about to fight, and relinquishing control over his fate until the drop pod hit. Nero had been right when he said he had preferred an assault delivered by Stormbird. The precise surgical nature of an airborne assault far preferable to a warrior than this hurtling descent from above. But the Warmaster had decided that the spear tip would be deployed by drop pod, reasoning, rightly Loken admitted, that thousands of Astartes smashing into the defenders' midst without warning would be more psychologically devastating. Loken ran through the moment the drop pod would hit in his mind, preparing himself for when the hatch charges would blow open. He gripped his bolter tightly and checked for the tenth time that his chainsword was in its scabbard at his side. Loken was ready.
10 seconds, Lacasta!
Shouted Vipers. Barely a second later, the drop pod impacted with such force that Loken's head snapped back, and suddenly the noise was gone, and everything went black. Lucius killed his first foe without even breaking stride. The dead man's armor was like glass, shimmering and iridescent, and his halberd's blade was fashioned from the same reflective substance. A mask of stained glass covered his face, the mouth represented by leading and filled with teeth of gem-like triangles. Lucius slid his sword clear, blood smoking from its edge, as the soldier slumped to the floor. A curved arch of marble shone red in the dawn's early light above him, and a swirl of dust and debris drifted around the drop pod he had just leapt from. The Precentor's palace stood before him, vast and astonishing, a stone flower with the spire at its center like a spectacular twist of overlapping granite petals. More drop pods hammered into the ground behind him. The plaza around the palace's north entrances, the main objective of the Emperor's children. A nearby drop pod blew open. An ancient Rylanor stepped from its red-lit interior, his assault cannon already cycling and tracking for targets.
Nasike! Yelled Lucius. To me!
Lucius saw a flash of colored glass from inside the palace, movement beyond the sweeping stone panels of the entrance hall. More palace guards reacted to the sudden, shocking assault, but contrary to what Lucius had been expecting, they weren't screaming or begging for mercy. They weren't even fleeing, or standing stock still, numb with shock. With a terrible war cry, the palace guard charged, and Lucius laughed, glad to be facing a foe with some backbone. He levelled his sword and ran towards them, Squad Nasike following behind him, weapons at the ready. 100 palace guardians ran at them, resplendent in their glass armor. They formed a line before the Astartes, leveled their halberds, and opened fire. Searing needles of silver filled the air around Lucius, gouging the armor of his shoulder guard and leg. Lucius lifted his sword arm to shield his head, and the needles spat from the glowing blade of his sword. Where they hit the stone around the entrance, it bubbled and hissed like acid. One of the Nesike fell beside Lucius, one arm molten and his abdomen bubbling.
"Perfection and death!"
cried Lucius, running through the white-hot silver needles. The Emperor's children and the palace guard clashed with a sound like a million windows breaking, the terrible screaming of the halberd guns giving way to the clash of blade against armour and point-blank bolter fire. Lucius's first sword blow hacked through a halberd shaft and tore through the throat of the man before him. Sightless glass eyes glared back at him, blood pumping from the guard's ruined throat, and Lucius tore the helm from his foe's head to better savour the sensation of his death. A plasma pistol spat a tongue of liquid fire that wreathed an enemy soldier from head to foot, but the man kept fighting, sweeping his halberd down to cut deep into one of Lucius's men, before another Astartes ripped off his head with a chainsword. Lucius pivoted on one foot from a halberd strike, and hammered the hilt of his sword into his opponent's face, feeling a tight anger that the faceplate held. The guard staggered away from him, and Lucius reversed his grip and thrust the blade through the gap between the glass plates at the guard's waist, feeling the blade's energy field burning through abdomen and spine. These guards were slowing the Emperor's children down, buying precious moments with their lives for something deeper in the palace. As much as Lucius was reveling in the sensations of the slaughter, the smell of the blood, the searing stink of flesh as the heat of his blade scorched it, and the pounding of blood in veins, he knew he could not afford to give the defenders such moments. Lucius ran onwards, slicing his blade through limbs and throats as he ran. He fought as though following the steps of an elaborate dance, a dance where he played the part of the victor and the enemy were there only to die. The palace guard were dying around him, and his armour was drenched with their blood. He laughed in sheer joy. Warriors still fought behind him, but Lucius had to press on before the palace guard was able to stall their advance with more men in front of them.
"Squad Cimondil! Rytherin! Kill these and then follow me!"
Fire soared from every direction as the Emperor's children forced their way towards the junction Lucius had reached. The swordsman darted his head past the corner, seeing a vast indoor seascape. A plume of water cascaded through a hole in the centre of a colossal granite dome, and a shaft of pink light fell alongside the water, sending brilliant rainbows of colour between the arches formed by the petals of the dome's surface. Islands rose from the indoor sea that took up most of the dome, each topped by picturesque follies of white and gold. Thousands of palace guards massed in the dome, splashing towards them through the waist-deep sea and taking up positions among the follies. Most wore the glassy armour of the men still dying behind Lucius, but many others were clad in far more elaborate suits of bright silver. Others still were wrapped in long streamers of silk that rippled behind them like smoke as they moved. Rylanor emerged into the dome behind Lucius, his assault cannon smoking, and the chisel-like grips of his power fist thick with blood.
"They're massing," spat Lucius. "Where are the damned world-eaters?"
"We shall have to win the palace by ourselves," replied Rylanor, his voice grating from deep within his sarcophagus.
Lucius nodded, pleased that they would be able to shame the world-eaters.
"Ancient, cover us! Emperor's children, break and cover fire! Nasike, keep up this time!"
Ancient Rylanor stepped out from the junction, and a spectacular wave of fire sheared through the air around him, a storm of heavy-caliber shell casings and oil-soaked fumes streaming from the cannon mounted on his shoulder. His explosive fire shredded the stone of the foremost island's follies, broken and bloodied bodies tumbling from the shattered wreckage.
"Go!"
shouted Lucius. But the Emperor's children were already charging, their training so thorough that every warrior already knew his place in the complex pattern of overlapping fire and movement that sent the strike force sweeping into the dome. Savage joy lit up Lucius's face as he charged, the thrill of battle and the sensations of killing stimulating his body with wondrous excess. In a swirling cacophony of noise, the perfection of death had come to the Coral City. On the southern side of the palace, a strange, organically formed building clung to the side of the palace like a parasite, its bulging liquid shape more akin to something that had been grown than something built. Its pale marble was threaded with dark veins, and the masses of its battlements hung like ripened fruit. From the expanse of marble monument slabs marking the passing of the city's finest and most powerful citizens, it was clear that this was a sacred place. Known as the Temple of the Song, it was a memorial to the music that Father Istvan had sung to bring all things into existence. It was also the objective of the World Eaters. The word that the invasion had begun was already out by the time the first World Eaters drop pods crashed into the plaza, shattering gravestones and throwing slabs of marble into the air. Strange music keened through the morning air, calling the people of the Coral City from their homes and demanding that they take up arms. The soldiers from the nearby city barracks grabbed their guns as the war singers appeared on the battlements of the temple to sing the song of death for the invaders. Called by the war singers' laments, the people of the city gathered in the streets and streamed towards the battle. The World Eaters' strike force was led by Captain Erlen, and as he emerged from his drop pod, he was expecting the trained soldiers that Angron had briefed them on, not thousands of screaming citizens swarming onto the plaza. They came in a tide, armed with anything and everything they had in their homes. But it was not the weapons they carried, but their sheer numbers and the terrible song that spoke of killing and murder that made them deadly.
"World Eaters, to me!" yelled Erlen,
hefting his bolter and aiming it into the mass of charging people. The white-armored warriors of the World Eaters formed a firing line around him, turning their bolters outwards.
"Fire!"
shouted Erlen, and the first ranks of the Coral City's inhabitants were cut down by the deadly volley. But the oncoming mass rose up like a spring tide as they clambered over the bodies of the dead. As the gap between the two forces closed, the World Eaters put up their bolters and drew their chainswords. Erlen saw the unreasoning hatred in the eyes of his enemies and knew that this battle was soon to turn into a massacre. If there was one thing at which the World Eaters excelled, it was massacre.
"Damn it!" spat Vipers. "We must have hit something on the way in!"
Loken forced his eyes open. A slice of light where the drop pod had broken open provided the only illumination, but it was enough for him to check that he was still in one piece. He was battered, but could feel no evidence of anything more than that.
"Lacasta, sound off!" ordered Vipers.
The warriors of Lacasta shouted their names, and Loken was relieved to hear that none appeared to have been injured in the impact. He undid the buckle of his grav harness and rolled to his feet. The drop pod canted at an unnatural angle. He pulled his bolter from the rack and pushed his way through the narrow opening broken in the side of the drop pod. As he emerged into the bright sunshine, he saw that they had struck a projecting pier of stone on one of the towers, the rubble of its destruction scattered around the ruined drop pod. He circled the wreckage, seeing that they were at least 200 meters above the ground, wedged amongst the massive battlements of the Siren Hold. To his left, he saw spectacular tomb spires encrusted with statues, while to his right was the Coral City itself, its magnificent structures bathed in the rosy glow of the sunrise. From this vantage point, Loken could see the whole city, the extraordinary stone flower of the palace and the western defences like scars across the landscape. Loken could hear gunfire from the direction of the palace and realised that the Emperor's children and World Eaters were already fighting the enemy. Gunfire echoed from below, sons of Horus units fighting in the tangle of shrines and statuary that filled the canyons between the tomb spires.
"We need a way down,"
said Loken, as Lacasta pulled themselves from the wreckage of the drop pod. Vipers jogged over with his gun at the ready.
"Bloody ground surveyors must have missed the projections," he grumbled.
"That's what it looks like,"
agreed Loken, as he saw another drop pod ricochet from the side of a tomb spire and careen downwards in a shower of broken statues.
"Our warriors are dying," he said bitterly. "Someone's going to pay for this."
"We look spread out," said Vipers,
glancing down into the Siren Hold. Between the tomb spires, smaller shrines and temples butted against one another in a complex jigsaw. Plumes of black smoke and explosions were already rising from the fighting.
"We need a place to regroup," said Loken.
He flicked to Torgadon's vox channel.
"Taric, Loken here. Where are you?"
A burst of static was his only reply. He looked across the Siren Hold and saw one tomb spire close to the wall, its many levels supported by columns wrought into the shapes of monsters, and its top sheared off by the impact of a drop pod.
"Damn. If you could hear me, Taric, make for the spire by the western wall, the one with the smashed top. Regroup there. I'm heading down to you."
"Anything?"
asked Vipers.
"No. The vox is a mess. Something's interrupting it."
"The spires?"
"It would take more than that," said Loken.
"Come on. Let's find a way off this damn wall."
Vipers nodded and turned to his men.
Locastra, start looking for a way down.
Loken leaned over the battlements as Locastra fanned out to obey their leader's command. Beneath him he could see the diminutive figures of Astartes fighting black-armored warriors in streaming firefight. He turned away, desperate to find a way down.
Here!
Shouted Brother Casto, Lacasta's flamer-bearer.
A stairway!
Good work,
said Loken, making his way over to see what Casto had found. Sure enough, hidden behind a tall, eroded statue of an ancient warrior was a dark stairway cut into the sand-colored stone. The passageway looked rough and unfinished, the stone pitted and crumbling with age.
Move, said Vipers. Casto, lead the way.
Yes, Captain, replied Casto,
plunging into the gloom of the passageway. Loken and Vipers followed him, the entrance barely wide enough for their armored bodies. The stairs descended for roughly 10 meters before opening into a wide, low-ceilinged gallery.
The wall must be riddled, said Vipers.
Catacombs,
said Loken, pointing to niches cut into the walls that held the mouldering remains of skeletons, some still swaddled in tattered cloth. Casto led them along the gallery, the bodies becoming more numerous the deeper they went, the skeletal remains piled 2 or 3 deep. Vipers snapped around suddenly, bolter up and finger on the trigger.
Vipers.
I thought I heard something.
We're clear behind, said Loken. Keep moving and focus. This could...
Movement,
said Casto, sending a blast of orange-yellow fire from his flamer into the darkness ahead of him.
Casto, barked Vipers. Report. What do you see?
Casto paused.
I don't know. Whatever it was, it's gone now.
The niches ahead gutted with flames, hungrily devouring the bare bones. Loken could see that there was no enemy up ahead, only Istvanian dead.
There's nothing there now, said Vipers. Stay focused, Locasta, and no jumping at shadows. You are sons of Horus.
The squad picked up the pace, shaking thoughts of hidden enemies from their minds as they moved rapidly past the burning grave niches. The gallery opened into a large chamber, Loken guessing that it must have filled the width of the wall. The only light was from the dancing flame at the end of Casto's flamer, the yellow light picking out the massive stone blocks of a tomb. Loken saw a sarcophagus of black granite, surrounded by statues of kneeling people with their heads bowed and hands chained before them. Panels set into the walls were covered in carvings where human forms acted out ceremonial scenes of war.
Casto, move up, said Vipers. Find us a way down.
Loken approached the sarcophagus, running his hand down its vast length. Its lid was carved to represent a human figure, but he knew that it could not be a literal portrait of the body inside. Its face had no features save for a pair of triangular eyes fashioned from chips of colored glass. Loken could hear the song from the siren hold outside, even through the layers of stone, a single mournful tone that rose and fell, winding its way from the tomb spires.
War singer,
said Loken bitterly.
They're fighting back. We need to get down there.
The silver-armored palace guards started flying. Surrounded by burning arcs of white energy, they leapt over the advancing Emperor's children, gleaming, leaf-shaped blades slicing downwards from wrist-mounted weapons. Lucius rolled to avoid a hail of blades, the silver guards swooping low to behead two of Squad Commandil, the charged blades cutting through their armor with horrific ease. He slid into the water, finding that it only reached his waist. Above him, the halberd guns of the palace guard were spraying silver fire at the Emperor's children, but the Astartes were moving and firing with their customary discipline. Even the bizarre sight of the palace's defenders did not dissuade them from their patterns of movement and covering fire. A body fell into the water next to him, its head blasted away by bolter fire, and blood pouring into the water in a scarlet bloom. Lucius saw that the silver guards were too quick and turned too nimbly for conventional engagement. He would just have to engage them unconventionally. One of the silver guards dived towards him, and Lucius could see the intricate filigree on the man's armor, the tiny gold threads like veins on the breastplate and greaves, and the scrollwork that covered his face. The guard dived like a seabird, firing a bright blade from his wrist. Lucius turned the missile aside with his sword and leapt to meet his opponent. The guard twisted in the air, trying to avoid Lucius, but he was too close. Lucius swung his sword and sliced the guard's arm from his body, his crackling sword searing through the armor. Blood sprayed from the smouldering wound, and the guard fell, twisting back towards the water. Lucius fell with the dead man, splashing back into the lake as the Emperor's children finally reached their enemy. Volleys of bolter fire scoured the islands, and his warriors advanced relentlessly on the survivors. The palace guards were backing away, forming a tighter and tighter circle. Glass-armored guards lay dead in heaps, and the artificial lake was ruddy pink and choked with bodies. Rylaner's assault cannon sent fire tearing through the silk-clad guards, whose preternatural speed couldn't save them as the cannon shells turned the interior of the dome into a killing ground. Another silver guard fell, bolter fire ripping through his armor. Squad Nausicaa joined Lucius, and he grinned wolfishly at them, elated at the prospect of fighting more of the silver guards.
"They're running," said Lucius. "Keep them on the back foot. Keep pressing on."
"Squad Caetheron's reporting from the plaza," said Brother Skethrin. "The World Eaters are fighting around the temple on the north side."
"Still? Sounds like they're holding off half the city."
"Ha! They can have them. It's what the World Eaters are good at," laughed Lucius, relishing the certain knowledge of his superiority. Nothing in the galaxy could match that feeling, but already it was fading, and he knew he would have to procure yet more opponents to satisfy his hunger for battle.
"We press on to the throne room," he said. "Ancient Rylanor, secure our rear. The rest of you, we're going for Prowl. Follow me. If you can't keep up, go and join the Death Guard."
His warriors cheered as they followed Lucius into the heart of the palace. Every one of them wanted to kill Prowl and hold his head aloft on the palace battlements so the whole of the Coral City could see. Only Lucius was certain that Prowl's head would be his. The Andronius was quiet and tense, its palatial rooms dark and its long, echoing corridors empty of all but menials. The ship's engines pulsed dimly in the stern, only the rumble of directional thrusters shuddering through the ship. Every station was manned, every blast door was sealed, and Tarvitz knew a battle alert when he saw it. What confused him was the fact that the Isvanians had no fleet to fight. The hull groaned, and Tarvitz felt a deep rumbling through the metal deck, sensing the motion of the ship before the artificial gravity compensated. Ever since the first wave of the spear tip had launched, the vessel had been moving, and Tarvitz knew that his suspicions of something amiss were well-founded. According to the mission briefings he had read earlier, Fulgrim's flagship had been assigned the role of launching the second wave once the palace and the siren hold had been taken. There was no need to move. The only reason to move a vessel after a launch was to move into low orbit in preparation for a bombardment. Though he told himself he was being paranoid, Tarvitz knew that he had to see for himself what was going on. He made his way swiftly through the Andronius towards the gun decks, keeping clear of such grand chambers as the Tarsilian amphitheatre and the columned grandeur of the Monument Hall. He kept to the areas of the ship where his presence would go unchallenged, and where those who might recognize him were unlikely to see him. He had told Rylanor that he wanted to renounce his position of honor in the spear tip, to replace Captain Odovakar as Eidolon's senior staff officer, relaying the commander's orders to the surface, but it would only be a matter of time before his subterfuge was discovered. Tarvitz descended into the lower reaches of the ship, far from where the Emperor's children dwelt in the most magnificent parts of the Andronius. The rest of the ship, inhabited by servitors and menials, was more functional, and Tarvitz knew he would pass without challenge here. The darkness closed around Tarvitz, and the yawning chasms of the engine structures opened out many hundreds of meters below the gantry on which he stood. Above the engine spaces were the reeking gun decks, where mighty cannons, weapons that could level cities, were housed in massive, armored revetments.
"Stand by for ordnance," chimed an automated metallic voice.
Tarvitz felt the ship shift again, and this time he could hear the creak of the hull as the planet's upper atmosphere raised the temperature of the outer hull. Tarvitz descended an iron staircase at the end of the dark gantry, and the vast expanse of the gun deck sprawled before him, a titanic vault that ran the length of the vessel. Huge hissing cranes fed the guns, lifting tank-sized shells from the magazine decks through blast-proof doors. Gunners and loaders sweated with their riggers, each gun serviced by 100 men who hauled on thick chains and levers in preparation for their firing. Servitors distributed water to the gun crews,
and Mechanicum adepts maintained vigil on the weapons to ensure they were properly calibrated. Tarvitz felt his resolve harden and his anger grow at the sight of the guns being made ready. Who were they planning to fire on? With thousands of Astartes on the planet's surface, bombarding the Coral City was absurd. Yet here the guns were, loaded and ready to unleash hell. He doubted that the men crewing these weapons knew which planet they were in orbit over, or even who they would be shooting at. Entire communities flourished below the decks of a starship, and it was perfectly possible that these men had no idea who they were about to destroy. He reached the end of the staircase and set foot on the deck, its high ceiling soaring above him like a mighty cathedral to destructive power. Tarvitz heard footsteps approaching and turned to see a robed adept in the livery of the Mechanicum. "Captain," inquired the adept, "is there something amiss?"
"No," said Tarvitz. "I'm just here to ensure that everything is proceeding normally."
"I can assure you, Lord, that preparations for the bombardment are proceeding exactly as planned. The warheads will be launched prior to the deployment of the second wave."
"Warheads?"
asked Tarvitz. "Yes, Captain," said the adept. "All bombardment cannons are loaded with air-bursting warheads, loaded with virus bombs as specified in our order of battle."
"Virus bombs?"
said Tarvitz, fighting to hold back his revulsion at what the adept was telling him. "Is everything all right, Captain?" asked the adept, noticing the change in his expression.
"I'm fine," Tarvitz lied, feeling as if his legs would give way any second. "You can return to your duties."
The adept nodded and set off towards one of the guns.
Virus bombs.
Weapons so terrible and forbidden that only the War Master himself and the Emperor before him could ever sanction their use. Each warhead would unleash the Life-Eater virus, a rampant organism that destroyed life in all its forms and wiped out every shred of organic matter on the surface of a planet within hours. The magnitude of this new knowledge and its implications staggered Tarvitz, and he felt his breath coming in short, painful gasps as he attempted to reconcile what he knew with what he had just learned. His legion was preparing to kill the planet below, and he knew with sudden clarity that it could not be alone in this. To saturate a planet with enough virus warheads to destroy all life would take many ships, and with a sick jolt of horror, he knew that such an order could only have come from the War Master. For reasons Tarvitz could not even begin to guess at, the War Master had chosen to betray fully a third of his warriors, exterminating them in one fell swoop.
"I have to warn them," he hissed, turning and running for the embarkation deck.